publishing a book that describes the president's father as a high-functioning sociopath, and the president is cheating on standardized tests as a college student. ABC's Cecilia Vega.
Mary Trump alleges that Donald Trump paid a friend to take the SATs for him to support his ultimately successful effort to transfer to the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania after 2 years of college at Fordham.
The White House says the book was only written for the money. You're listening to ABC News.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 7750 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 7750. Enjoy.
Iran is now claiming Israel bombed one of its nuclear plants. ABC's Jordana Miller is in Jerusalem.
After describing it as a minor accident, the Iranian regime now blaming Israel for the explosion at the Natanz nuclear facility last week. Spokesman Ali Rabi'i called on the international community to respond to the, quote, dangerous action. Unnamed Mideast officials have told U.S. media outlets Israeli operatives placed a bomb at Natanz. It reportedly damaged the production line for advanced centrifuges, Iran's key to shortening its breakout time to the bomb. Israel denies any involvement. Jordana Miller, ABC News, Jerusalem.
Great Britain is looking to give a kickstart to its economy after all the coronavirus shutdowns.
The program will involve pumping money into funding hundreds of thousands of jobs to get young people off the unemployment rolls. Former Treasury official David Gawk says now is not the time to worry about government debt.
In the short term, it's about supporting the economy. It's about helping people stay in work. It's about ensuring that the economy is not scarred by the exceptional circumstances we're in.
Unemployment is expected to shoot up here in the fall when the current government-funded furlough payment program is withdrawn. Tom Rivers, ABC News, London.
One of golf's biggest events, the Ryder Cup, being delayed this year by the coronavirus. It was supposed to be played this September in Wisconsin. This is ABC News.
Orangutans. They're beautiful, playful, and majestic, and disappearing. Every day, as many as 20 orangutans vanish. They starve to death when their homes are destroyed or are killed when they stray into villages in search of food. International Animal Rescue is fighting for the survival of the critically endangered orangutan. But we can't do it without you. Please visit internationalanimalrescue.org and help us save orangutans before it's too late. That's internationalanimalrescue.org.
I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Let's take a trip down memory lane with Niagara County's Great History Show. Now, here's your host, Norm Palmer.
Out to the ball game, take me out with the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks, I don't care if I never get back, let me root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame, for it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Yes, folks, we are going to take you to the old ball game. That is because with me in the studio, we have the curator from the Niagara County History Center, Mr. Terry Abrams. And in the studio, along with him, Western New York Hall of Fame baseball player John Greco. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Norm. Good to be with you.
If I turn the right button, John, we turn you on. I've done that a few times. Now, Terry is the curator that has put together a fantastic display at the History Center. It's called Take Me Out to the Ball Game. So, Terry, tell us about that great display.
Okay. Well, first, before I do that, I have to talk a little bit about what else is going on. We're having a little fundraiser because, you know, we've been closed during this pandemic, and so you know, we need to raise money just like everybody else. So there's a fundraiser going on, supporting history through art, as easy as 1, 2, 3 works by Judy Collins. And for those people who feel comfortable visiting the Niagara History Center, which is located at 215 Niagara Street here in Lockport, you can come and see her works on display, or you can go online at artbyjudycollins.com, and you can support the History Center by purchasing an original work featured at the show in person or from the online show, or you can purchase a matted reproduction or greeting card from her online store. And 40% of all sales from all sources of Judy's artwork in July and August will benefit the Niagara County Historical Society. It's sponsored in part by the Niagara Art Trail, and she's going to be in person. She's there today, Wednesday, July 8th, from 1 to 3 o'clock. And because of the heat, she's going to be indoors. But during the rest of the time, she's going to be appearing. You know, there's a whole schedule on July, Saturday, July 11th, Tuesday, July 14th, Friday the 17th, Tuesday, July 21st, Friday, July 24th, Wednesday, July 29th, and Tuesdays, Fridays, Saturdays, also in August. She'll be out, she'll be on the porch, working, painting. She paints every day. That's one of the other things that's going on. So, but back to baseball. So again, originally we had scheduled this exhibit for earlier, starting in April, but because we were closed, it's been pushed back. So it's open, but it's open now, and people can come in to see it. We ask that you practice social distancing, that you wear a mask when you come into the center. But this exhibit was inspired by a donation from a man, Mr. Bruce Brandle, who lives in Amherst. And last year, he donated a photograph, which was taken by his aunt, Cecilia Netcher. And it's a photograph of the Lockport Cubs, who is a Pony League team. A minor league affiliate of the Chicago Cubs. And the picture was taken in 1945, and it shows the Lockport team in the dugout at the Sampson Naval Training Center, located in what is now Sampson Lake State Park on Seneca Lake. And so he donated this photo to us, and he also very graciously donated to have the photograph framed. And so that sort of inspired me to create this exhibit, which is titled "Take Me Out to the Ball Game," and it talks, we talk about and we show photos and artifacts showing the history of baseball in Niagara County, and it goes, and it's a terrific exhibit to see. I mean, because there's not a lot of baseball going on right now, that you can't go to the games, but you can come to this exhibit, and you can look at the history of baseball in Niagara County. Some of our earliest photographs go back to the 1880s. Baseball became really big throughout the country back in the late 19th century, and a lot of communities had teams that they would go and travel around and to other communities and play, and they were all sort of typical, sort of semi-professional teams in many ways. And so we have images from what was called the Pastimes, a YWCA team, or a YMCA team, excuse me, from the 1880s. And then again, we see, we have another photograph, which is from Old Home Week in 1910, and showing the reunion team of that same team, and not all, but many of the same players in that photograph. You know, so we're talking about 30 years apart. So so we have images of them. We have images of industrial league teams. A lot of companies, factories, other businesses in the area had baseball teams, and so we have a photograph showing that, showing teams from Harrison Radiator, Indurated Fiber, Niagara Paper Company, and all these other companies from Niagara County. So baseball has been big for a long time in Niagara County.
And I have been a baseball aficionado my entire life, born and raised in a ballpark we'll talk about in a little while. Mm-hmm. But boy, was I surprised when I came over to look at your display. I didn't realize that the first team to play baseball and the year they played in Lockport, New York was 1858. Mm-hmm. I said, wow, did not realize they played that long ago in Lockport, and they played at Courthouse Square. And folks, you can learn all of this also over at the History Center with the display, outstanding display, Terry. Mm-hmm. And if you have any questions, comments for any of us today, 433-1433 is the phone number. We'll be here for the next hour till noon. And I'm sure once we get rolling, you are going to have your memory banks tapped. Go ahead, Terry.
Okay. Well, and baseball is not just in Lockport, but Niagara Falls as well. And we have a little bit about professional players. You know, we have players all levels. Everybody is familiar with Sal the Barber Magley. You know, he's probably one of the most famous professional baseball players to come out of Niagara Falls. But we have a little bit about a little lesser-known figure, and that's Benny Bengoff. Bernard Oliver Bengoff, he was born in 1898. He died in 1968, and he played. He was a Niagara Falls native. He played. He was a catcher, and he played for Niagara Falls High School, and he played for Niagara University. He is a graduate of Niagara University, so he played, for their baseball team. He began his professional career at the age of 18 with the Buffalo Bisons in the International League in 1917. So he played with them for about six seasons, and he made his major league debut at the age of 24 with the New York Yankees in 1923, which was the first year they played their home games in Yankee Stadium. So he started out, he served as a backup catcher, and then on June 1st, 1925, he was giving the starting catcher's job. And that was the same day that Lou Gehrig replaced Wally Pipp as the Yankees' first baseman. So and that was when, Lou Gehrig started his, his famous Iron Man streak. Benny Bengoff here, he's playing with, Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth and this, famous classic, Yankees team from the 20s.
Well, I don't know if you noticed it. I don't know if you looked over at John, but when you said Yankees, his hair went right straight up because John is one of the biggest Yankee fans in this area. We're going to talk about that later on in the show.
Mm-hmm. So, yes. So he was the starting catcher, and he was the catcher for a while, and then but unfortunately, his major league career didn't because of a recurring injury to his throwing arm. He wasn't as successful or had the longevity of other players. So he sort of lost his starting position, but he played regularly late in the 1928 season, and he started all four games of the 1928 World Series when the Yankees swept the St. Louis Cardinals. So, and he led American League catchers in 1928 with a 9.92 fielding percentage. So, he was mostly known as a defensive specialist. You know, he wasn't really known as a big hitter, which, I guess really didn't matter much when you have Babe Ruth on your team. So, major league career lasted up until 1932. So, and then he returned he went back to the minor leagues. He served as a player manager for several years, playing for the Washington Generals, and playing manager for the Joplin Miners. And then finally, he retired as a player at the age of 38, about 1936-37. So, and then he continued on as a coach, coaching in the minor leagues, coaching in the major leagues. He coached for the Philadelphia Phillies for many years, and then, in fact, they won the National League pennant in 1950. And so Benny went back as a coach to the World Series there in 1950 with the Philadelphia Phillies. Unfortunately, they had the misfortune to play against the Yankees again.
Another smile, folks.
And of course, they lost the World Series in four games. They were swept by the Yankees. But of course, they had this huge Hall of Fame team with Casey Stengel as their manager, Yogi Berra, Joe DiMaggio, Whitey Ford, Johnny Mize, Phil Rizzuto, all on the Yankees team at that time. So, it's probably the Phillies. They had their team was known as the Whiz Kids. They had, a very young team. So, going up against an experienced team like that, it's no surprise, I guess, that they lost. But he coached up until 1959, and then after that he continued to work for the Phillies in public relations. He died in 1968 and was buried at St. Dominic's Church Cemetery in Torresdale, Pennsylvania. So, that's the story of Benny Bengoff. As I said, somebody who, had a successful career in baseball, as a player, as a coach, but isn't quite as well known. So we thought we'd sort of spotlight him for our exhibit.
All right, I'll take over with the most famous baseball player in Western New York, and that was Sal Magley. Now, I'm going to ask the trivia question, and with the lead-in intro, you will probably be able to figure it out. But if you would have asked me, and John, I'll aim this one towards you, who was on the mound and who was the ace pitcher when Bobby Thompson hit the home run that was heard around the world at the Polo Grounds in 1951 when the Giants won the pennant, came back from 13 and a half games down.
Geez, I finally get a chance to talk, and you ask me a question like that. I actually don't recall who that was.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Well, that was Sal Magley, by the way. Okay. And that a lot of people don't know, but a trivia question that could probably make you a lot of money if you wanted to go out if you're a gambling man. Now, Magley was one of a kind, raised in Niagara Falls, born in Niagara Falls. He led the team the next year with 23 wins in 1951, but he had a tremendous, tremendous pitching style. He was 18-4 in 1950. That's an .818 percentage, John. I think anybody would take that on the mound. And he fell just short, 1 2/3 innings of breaking Carl Hubbell's National League record for 45 consecutive scoreless innings. He won 18 more games in 52. Now, Sal's three-year record of 4-15 with the Buffalo Bisons did not foretell his later brilliance. He played for the Giants, and he was known as the Barber. No, not because he cut your hair in Niagara Falls, because if you went up against Sal, he was a great inside pitcher. John, you being a slugger, you know what that inside pitcher means.
That's right. You don't care for that too much as a hitter, that's for sure.
Yeah, so Sal Magley goes down as one of the top players in Niagara County. Now, we have one more player in Niagara County that very famous, but he was an actor. And he is in Lockport's Hall of Fame. John, you will know him when I mention the name. And if I talk about baseball movies, what's one of your favorites, John?
Well, certainly the one where War Memorial Stadium with Robert Redford. That was a great movie. Can't think of the name of it right now, but
Natural.
The Natural, that's right. I shouldn't forget that. But, yeah, that was a great movie. Great movie. Mm-hmm.
And great call, because in that movie, Robert Redford hit a home run, or should I say Roy Hobbs, hit a home run off a pitcher that is in Lockport's Hall of Fame. John's got a question mark on his face.
No, I don't.
Mr. Phil Rosenberg.
A former teammate of mine.
One of the nicest guys you ever wanted to meet. And John, maybe you could tell us a little bit about Phil, but I've got a question that was asked to Phil when we inducted him into the Hall of Fame as I was the announcer and the MC for that great affair. Now, Bill Agronin was the women's basketball coach at Niagara University for quite a few years. And Bill, of course, was on the committee, and he was the presenter for Phil Rosenberg. He looked at Phil, and he said, "I have just one question, Phil. Why the heck did you throw Robert Redford that pitch?" So tell us a little bit about, we'll go into your days in a few minutes, John, about Phil as a teammate and a player.
Well, Phil was a great teammate, and I guess the best way to describe him would be he was a bulldog on the mound. If you know Phil outside the baseball field, he's a fun-loving guy. He did a lot of crazy things, but when he got on the mound, he was something else. I mean, that's the kind of guy you wanted out there when you had to have a win. And he started playing for Bus Lines, believe it or not, in the Erie Niagara Suburban League when he was 16 years old. He went on to play with the Voyagers for a while, but while he was with Bus Lines, he was a fantastic pitcher, all-star year in and year out, and certainly one of the prominent pitchers in our championship run in 1977. But Phil was a bulldog on the mound.
Now, you played for Bus Lines, and the owner of Bus Lines, Mr. Weeks, was a fantastic sports-minded individual that helped right up to my career. And a couple of years ago when he retired from owning the Bus Lines, talk a little bit about Bus Lines, the Suburban League, and how it enhanced this area's baseball.
Well, first of all, the Suburban League was sponsored by the Buffalo News and was at one time the oldest semi-pro league in the country. There were several players that came out of there, and of course, if I start naming names, I'll leave somebody out. But I can tell you, when I first started playing in 1972, a guy that was playing for Lackawanna was by the name of Ron Jaworski. And Ron Jaworski, of course, went on to have quite an NFL career. But then you had other players like Len Jankowicz, who played for Lancaster, and Lenny was certainly one of the most prominent coaches in this area for a long time. A guy by the name of Joe Hesketh played for Lakeshore, and he had a prominent major league career. I think the last piece was with the Red Sox. A local boy here who played at Wilson years ago, starred for Wilson, Mike Twardowski, was in the Boston Red Sox organization with Pawtucket for a number of years. And so those are some of the names of players that played in the majors, but then you also had a whole bunch of guys that were drafted that, you know, never went on to play in the major leagues, but players like Rennie Stoll, who was drafted in an early age. But the Suburban League was a very prominent league. As I said, it was sponsored by the Buffalo News, and it covered Western New York, the Southern Tier, and Northern Pennsylvania. And what you really wanted to do was to win your league, because once you won the league, you went to what you call the all-around playoffs, where you played the champions of these teams from the Southern Tier in Northern Pennsylvania. And it was really quality baseball, and it was a fun time for a long time for me and a lot of the guys that I played with.
So was the next step of going into the semi-pro leagues and your chance of making it to the bigs?
Well, I don't think at that time anybody would think about going to the big leagues once you were playing in the Suburban League. Some guys did, like Mike Twardowski. He went on after that, but some guys went on to to major league camps, never got signed, or were offered minimal contracts and decided not to do that and to play semi-pro baseball. And I always joked around about the semi-pro part, because the only pro part was that you had to sign a contract. And there wasn't any money involved. But fortunately, we had a great sponsor, as you mentioned, the Weeks family, and in later years, Tommy Weeks, of course, who treated us really well in all those years that I played, and certainly other years too. They really took care of us as a team.
And there was a big dude down to Wilson when you mentioned Wilson. I think a few of his home runs are still floating in the lake, and that's our former sheriff, Jimmy Vautour.
Yeah, I never played with Jim, but I know Jim was a very prominent player, and he and I were inducted into the Western New York Baseball Hall of Fame in the same year, which was 2008. And Jim was a heck of a ball player, and he was a heck of a sheriff too, recently retired, and a quality guy for sure.
Now, I was born and raised at Dudley Square. Dudley Square is one of the city parks that, in my day, was an outstanding series of parks in Lockport, New York. For people that weren't born or raised here or know about it, Terry, you're not from Lockport, so I don't know how much is in the History Center, but there were seven parks in Lockport. Each one of the parks had a ball diamond. Dudley, Dolan, Outwater, Vets, Grassy, Willow, and William Street. And it was a haven for the high school baseball players during the summertime that wanted to stay sharp. Clip Smith was a radio television personality that was a pretty big person in this area, not only physically, but star-wise, too. Clip was called the Clipster because he had a quip for everything that you could think of. Great, great announcer. Played the tuba in the band, and he always joked about it on the air. Now, Clip's dad was Coach Smith, and Coach Smith started a recreation league in the summer, and it turned out to be one of the greatest things that was ever invented. For a lot of us that did not play high school ball, had a chance to play against most of the high school players. Now, this was a softball program during the day, but a lot of the moms let the kids play softball because, you know, it sounded okay, you could do that. Well, I got news for you. The softball is harder than the baseball. And we had some great, great times. I played from the time I was 5 to the time I was 18 when I went into the service. And when Melissa Collins said, we're going to do a baseball show about the display, the wife had to scrape me off the ceiling 3-4 times because I got so high, because the stories, and I'm sure John has several stories about the Suburban League, some we can tell on the air, some we can't tell on the air. But I have, and the parks' names too, like Vets Park was changed, and at Joseph E. Kibler Park, they changed it to Vet Park. Now, Big Joe, well, Papa Joe we call him, because Joe Kibler, Cigar Joe Kibler, that you probably had umpired some of your games, and I umpired with Joe Kibler many times. I don't think he ever lit the cigar. I've never seen a cigar lit, but he always had a cigar in his mouth. So Papa Joe was a driving force in the midget league. Now, Terry, in our leagues back years ago, there wasn't a little league. So the midget league was the first place that you could go and play baseball with competitive. And it was Midget B was from 13 to 15, and then Midget A was from 16, I believe 18 or 19, John, and they might have moved it up now.
Yeah, I believe so, Norm. I'm not even sure where the Midget League stands right now, but it was Midget B and Midget A were very prominent in those years that you mentioned.
And then Grassy Park was named after one of our soldiers that lost his life. He was killed at Iwo Jima, and that was Lieutenant Dominic Grassy. Now, if you're not familiar with Lockport, you wouldn't even know where Grassy Park was. Mm-hmm. And on the corner of the entrance into the park was the homestead of one of Lockport's prominent boxers, Tony Ventura. Tony Ventura lived right on the corner, and there's a paint shop on the other corner. You go down this little driveway, and there is the secluded Grassy Park. And some many, many games there that was so exciting. And then Willow Park, and it seems like a lot of the different high school stars that played many sports. I happen to be a pitcher. I would spend all day in the park playing ball. Then at night, we would go over and watch the men play. When I was old enough to know what was going on, Dudley Square, John, was a Midget A park, probably the shortest left field porch in the world. Mr. Sirianni lived on the corner of Adams and Union Street, which was left field. Well, at the time, we were all friends. Everybody knew everybody. And as we grew up, I stayed friends with a young man named Tony Casanova. You probably remember the Casanovas, John.
I sure do.
Tony was the only guy that I ever knew to hit the ball over Mr. Sirianni's house in left field, and it probably went all the way to East Avenue. So Tony Casanova has that In my repertoire, the only person that I had seen hit a baseball. Now, this is baseball at night that I'm talking about. And there's one quick story about this summer league that I played in, Terry. Mm-hmm. My wife and I are walking through our favorite box store here in Lockport, and there's a guy walking towards me, and all of a sudden he yells out, "Goodbye, Palmer!" And my wife grabbed my arm. She thought I was going to get shot on the spot. And it was, and big hug, of course, him and I. It was my old-time playing buddy from Dudley Square. And now I'm talking probably 55, 60 years ago, easy. And our starting lineup was Dave Good, Mike Bye, Norm Palmer. So it was Goodbye Palmer. That was the joke. And those are the kind of memories that we have as Lockport baseball players that don't go away. You can't replace them. Mm-hmm. Of course, I get a tear in my eye now because I drive around and I look at the parks in Lockport. The screens are down. They do not play recreational ball there. Half the parks don't have diamonds anymore. But these are stories that John and I can tell with the parks. And John, you played in a park that wasn't the easiest either, and it's right next door here. It's Outwater Park.
Well, Norm, actually, our home field for bus lines was Crow Park in Alcott.
Okay.
And you touched on something that I was going to touch on. It's really a sad note, and good that we have these memories, because a lot of these parks, there's no baseball being played there anymore. And I can honestly tell you that years ago, when I took a trip down to Crow Park, there was no diamond there anymore. And I actually started tearing up.
Yeah.
And some people may not understand that, but, you know, I played for bus lines for 14 years. It was a great time. And to us, that was the major leagues. And to see that park not exist anymore was it really hit me, you know. And it's sad to see, but that's just the way of our times. But certainly the memories live on, no question about that.
And a very modest man, because John was one heck of a baseball player. You don't get in the Western New York Hall of Fame if you're not a good baseball player.
Well, Norm, I want to say, though, that I was fortunate to play with some high-quality ball players, and they're probably a lot of them are in the Baseball Hall of Fame, but a lot of other ones should be. And I certainly attribute my induction, a lot of that, to them.
And now you are an assistant coach with Lockport High School. And your kids played sports. I know when I talked to you when you came back to broadcast with me. He is also my broadcast partner, folks. He started out about 30 years ago with John Adams and myself, and we had a great time. Then he raised his kids and coached his kids. You made a statement to me when you come back. You had the biggest smile on your face. You guys won the pennant last year for the high school, and you played on the brand new artificial field. Tell me the stories before on the dirt fields that you played on, and to that, the difference and the advantage the kids might have now.
Well, I can certainly speak to where we used to play our games, and that was at Outwater Park. And frankly, Outwater Park turned out to be a pretty dangerous park with those lips on third base. And the third base and first baseline. But the new fields are just absolutely phenomenal. Now, I'm kind of an old school guy. I like to see some dirt every once in a while. There's absolutely no dirt on that field, but I tell you what, there's no bad hops. And the kids certainly respond to that. And I can tell you that our success last year, a lot of it was attributed not only to the players, but to the field. We were actually able to get out and practice 7 or 8 times before the season started. Whereas in previous years, your first game was the first time you were on a field, and sometimes it was 2 or 3 weeks later because of rain, you know, because of the way the climate was around here, and then the fact that the fields had to dry up. So that was it's a tremendous park. If you get a chance, go out and see it. I know there's some other plans for some softball fields out there also, which would be great. Certainly a real a feather in the cap for Lockport to see that.
And different coaching on that surface than coaching like that's another thing I wanted to touch on is in this program that they had for summer for us, they would hire high school seniors usually going into their senior season to coach and run these parks. And Terry, some of the names that I can throw out is in our Lockport Hall of Fame. Mike Crow, all of the baseball players that went through Lockport system, and the fun we had was because of the great coaches. And John, going through that yourself, you know that I took a drive down to the store last evening, and finally the kids are on the Little League field getting ready to play, and it was 94 degrees, and they're out there playing. Now, one thing I'd like to mention before I forget it is, 2 blocks from us, a family named Ritz was raised, Roy Ritz and his family. He loved the game of baseball, and this goes into your display on how much Lockport loved baseball. He built a baseball diamond in his backfield. You remember that, John?
Yes, I do. Unbelievable.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think the third generation of Ritzes are playing ball right now. 433, folks. 1-4-3-3. If you have any questions, comments for Terry, John, or myself. I'd like to bring up a couple stories. One more about the Midget League. Years ago, well, in my broadcasting career, I see a lot of the athletes on the basketball floor that play baseball also. And there was this little pint-sized guard that played for Lockport High School. Her name was, or is, Judy DeVogel. And Judy DeVogel signed up for baseball. Now, if I'm not stretching the fact, if she was 5'4", 5'5", she was lucky. And she played midget baseball. And I'll tell you, I have talked to a few hundred of the baseball players through the years. I haven't found one that didn't fear going to the plate against Judy DeVogel. And she is in the Hall of Fame. And not for baseball, of course, but for other sports at the high school. And, John, your comments on Judy, you remember hearing stories about her.
Yeah, I do. And I'll tell another story about Judy. Several years ago, when I was still playing some pickup basketball, Judy would come in with the guys, Dick Crossan and a number of other people. And Judy would be one of the players that was playing with the guys. And I often matched up against her. And I was just as embarrassed as some of the kids were years ago facing her as a pitcher, because Judy would school me out on the basketball court. But, yeah, a great athlete. And it, there's another size doesn't matter. Heart does.
We have a call coming in. Good morning. You're on Niagara County's Great History Show with Terry Abrams. Question or comment? Go ahead.
Okay. Well, good morning. It's Melissa.
Hi, Melissa.
I was wondering if you could ask people if they have any photographs of when Outwater Park had their ballpark.
Oh, we sure can do that. Because if you're listening, folks, Melissa would like pictures of Outwater Park when it was a ballpark.
Yeah, we really don't have any pictures of that, and people talk about it all the time and about it having the stands and the little shop and everything else, but we would love some photos if anybody had them, and they don't have to give them to us. We could just scan them if they want to bring them in.
So while you are on the air, tell us about where the History Center is located, how they can get there, how they can get a hold of you online or phone or whatever.
Okay, so we're located at 215 Niagara Street in Lockport. Our website is niagarahistory.org. Our phone number is 434-7433. And we're here Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5. So if anybody has photos that they would like us to, or would be kind enough for us to borrow that we could scan them, we would be really interested. And they can give us a call. They can call Terry, who's on the show today. They can call myself or Anne Marie, and we'd be more than happy to accommodate them.
Now, everybody knows how bad the weather is. Well, I'm going to blow the whistle on Melissa because I think she deserves it today. Now, Melissa's recuperating from some illnesses, right? Take a guess where she's recuperating, folks, at a cottage on the lake. Thank you, Melissa. Okay, that's it.
I'm in my office.
Okay, thank you, and I'm sure we can drum up some pictures for you. Thank you,
okay.
Melissa.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Norm, talking about Outwater Park, you know, we have in our exhibit, we have a copy of a book by Louis Rosati, and the title of the book is My Winning Season, Memories of Baseball and Family Growing Up Italian in Lockport's West End. And Louis Rosati grew up actually just down the street from the History Center on Niagara Street. And he talks about, you know, when he was younger, you know, this was in the 50s, he played for the midget league teams. And he said they had strict boundary rules on some of them. And so he had started out playing with a lot of his friends at Grossi Park, but then his parents moved to the north side of Niagara Street. And since now that they were on the north side, now that he had to play for the teams playing at Outwater Park. So, you know, so he was a little sad about that, you know, that he had to, you know, had to leave his friends and play for, it sounds kind of funny, you know, that you know, that it would be such a big difference, but you know, that's what happened a lot of times is, you know, you move into a different neighborhood and you hang out with different people and you end up playing in, you know, in a different park. And so he ended up, he would see his friends that he had played, you know, baseball with for several years. Now they're on the opposing team. So that's, you know, that's his little story about having to switch from Grossi Park to Outwater Park. So,
yeah, and just to kind of build on the whole Lockport scene as far as baseball is concerned, I just wanted to mention in the Suburban League years ago, there were several teams that from this area, teams like Lackawanna, Lancaster, Clarence, Amherst, Alden, Akron. Couple of them a lot bigger than Lockport. One team from each city, except for Lockport. Lockport had three teams represented in the Suburban League. Lockport Redmond, Diversified Manufacturing, and of course Bus Lines. So that tells you a little bit about the quality of baseball in Lockport. All three of those teams had some very, very good ball players that I played with and played against, and a real tribute to Lockport baseball.
And also Lockport Fast Pitch Softball. Some of our friends, John, that we know, used to be great, great fast pitch softball players. And two that come to mind for duels that we couldn't wait to come to Dudley Square was Danny DeBreeze DiNardo going up against Josh Randall. That was two pitchers that could wing the softball. If they put a clock on it back in those days, I'm sure it was close to the 100-mile mark like it in baseball. And they called Dan the Breeze because if you had to think about the pitch, all you felt was the breeze.
Well, you know, Norm, I'll add one more to that. I never played fast pitch, but I worked with a guy who's a real gentleman and a great coworker. I worked with him at General Motors, and that was Jimmy Grundy. Jimmy Grundy was a heck of a pitcher. And another one of those guys that mild-mannered off the field, as nice a guy as you want to meet, but when they got between those lines, they were tigers out there, and Jimmy Grundy was certainly another one.
And I pitched against his brother, Joel. They were the first pitchers in this area that did the slingshot. And I was, when I watched the adult men play the fast pitch, Augie Sansone was a pitcher. And he had the figure eight. So I pitched figure eight. And my mother wasn't happy because I used to wear a pair of sneakers out every couple of days because you go up on your toe on the figure eight. But yeah, the Grundys were probably the best fast pitch pitchers in that era. We have another call coming in. Good morning. You're on Niagara County's History Show. Go ahead. Question or comment?
Well, good morning. You've been talking about parks, and you said baseball in the beginning of the program. All I could think of was Farley's Field. Now, do you know where Farley's Field was?
I can't hear you.
Farley's
Field. You know where Farley's Field was. You're talking baseball.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
What is the name?
Farley's Field.
Farley's Field.
Farley's?
Farley. F-A-R-L-E-Y.
Well, the Farley family that I know is in Wright's Corners. That's I don't know if they had a baseball field there, but no, I don't know where Farley's Field is.
Okay, Farley's Field was quite the place that, well, I know it was in the 30s because I was a kid then, and then probably in the 20s and the 10s before that, and it's where the Armory on Willow Street is today.
Okay, great.
They had a grandstand there. They played baseball, and they also played football, and the north end played, or the south end played Pioneer Hill, and so, but it was a very, very active field. And it was before Willow Park came along, and they had, as I say, they had a grandstand, and I was a kid there, and I lived across the street, and so, I mean, I was always over there, we were always over there, we went over and harassed the players when they were playing, and one of the famous players back then was Bill Judd.
Yes, I remember Bill.
Okay, and his wife is over 100 years old, and she's still alive.
Wow. Well, thank you very much.
There were a lot of good times over there, and to me, baseball goes back to Farley's Field.
Thank you.
And I also always went to the Pony League games, too.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the call.
Okay, thank you.
Memories. Lots of memories that we have. John left without, I've messed up my phone line here, so go ahead.
Well, I just want to say, she just, at the end, very end there, she talked about the Pony League. And so, and that's, you know, another here, a minor league affiliate, you know, in Lockport, you know, their Pony League. The Pony League began in 1939. And Pony, it stands for, P-O-N-Y stands for Pennsylvania, Ontario, New York. That's where the teams were located. When the Pony League first was created in 1939, the Niagara Falls had a team, which didn't last very long. But then in 1942, a team came to Lockport. An organization whose purpose was to advance sports and recreation in Lockport, and that was known as the Screwball Club. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Screwball Club.
Absolutely.
And know of that. We have, and in fact, we have a little artifact relating to them in our display. And so they helped to bring, you know, the Pony League team to Lockport, and it lasted until 1950. And so we have some, you know, some artifacts in our display relating to that team. You know, they changed their affiliation over time, but they won a couple of championships in the 40s. So we have, you know, we have photos of them, the teams with their banner, and
that was the Lockport Reds.
The Lockport Reds.
Yes. Yes.
And we have baseballs as well, signed by players from that team.
Another call coming in.
Good morning.
Good morning. Speaking of the underhand fastball pitch, anybody out there remember Red's Grill with the pinstripes? Those guys were all very professional. Tommy Kaz, the Ritz family. Like to hear if anybody remembers that team.
Yes, we do. Or I do. Would you turn your radio off, sir? We have an echo.
Oh. Yeah, they were all very professional back in the day, I can tell you that.
Yeah, they were one of the more prominent teams in the area at that time. I certainly remember that.
Right. I just wanted to send in a little thought of it.
Thank you very much.
If anybody else recalls, have a great day.
Thanks. 433-1433. And as we are witnessing today, John, memories. A lot of memories that we have that is the only thing we have left as the Diamonds have disappeared in Lockport. Now, you talk about the Lockport Reds, Terry. Mm-hmm. One of the names I'm sure John will remember, I have the roster here, Jimmy White.
Yeah, Jimmy White played for the Lockport Reds, and he was the manager, or one of the coaches, one of the managers for Bus Lines in 1977. That was the first year that we won the championship. And I'm going to tell you a little story about Jimmy White. Jimmy, when he took over the team, he ran the team as though it was a professional team. And he expected his players to act a certain way. And I'll tell you a little story. We were playing in a game at Crow Park, and I was batting at the time. And I went up to the plate, and we were beating somebody pretty badly. I can't remember exactly what the score was or who the team was, but I remember I went up to the plate and I was kind of joking around with the catcher, and I looked down at Jimmy for the sign, and I still had a smile on my face. Well, he called timeout and asked me to come down and talk to him. And I went down, and he said, what are you laughing at? What are you smiling at? I said, well, I was just talking to the catcher. And he said, listen, when you're on this field, you hate that pitcher. You hate him. And I was like totally taken aback. He said, you can talk and have a good time after the game, but you're serious when you're on this field. I don't care what the score is. Now go back there and hit. So that was the story about Jimmy White. I will tell you that we were 34-2 that year, and we won the championship for the first time, the all-around championship, 1977. So that had quite an effect on us overall as a team.
As you can see, Terry, baseball was paramount in Lockport for many, many years. And for people as myself that was raised at a ballpark. And, John, I'll go head-to-head with you on the gopher holes in Dudley Square versus Outwater Park. Because we always said if you could play baseball at Dudley Square, you could play anywhere. Now, we had a big event happen in Lockport many, many years ago. There was a young man that tried to make it in the bigs, and he didn't make it. So he was playing fast-pitch softball. His name was Eddie Fainter. And he was in a game against a bunch of wiseacres. And they won the game fairly easy. Eddie was a pitcher, and he threw a no-hitter. And Eddie went by the dugout, posing dugout, and made some comments. So the other team got all over Ed. Ed said, I'll tell you what I'll do. He said, I'll take my catcher, my first baseman, and my shortstop, and I'll beat any team you want to put up against me. He later on was known as the king in his court. You ready for this? 65 years of softball, fast pitch. He had 9,743 victories, 141,517 strikeouts, 930 no-hitters, 238 perfect games, and he lost the game in Lockport. He lost 100 and some games in his career. That was the big event for the fast pitch guys that played in Lockport. We have about 4 minutes left, guys, so whatever you would like to recap in this 4 minutes, I knew it was going to fly by. It has been fantastic. If you want to call in, we still have about 4 minutes, folks. 433-1433. The name of the Niagara County demonstration is Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Terry, tell us the main gist of what they're going to see when they come over to take me out to the ball game.
Well, we have a lot of photos of, you know, of ball teams going back to the 1880s and coming, you know, up to, you know, the 40s and early. And in fact, there's if you want to see Norm in his youth, there's a photo of him in his Dudley Square team from the 1950s. We have John Greco here has very generously loaned us some artifacts from his time playing with the Lockport Busmen. There's, you know, a uniform shirt and, you know.
One more call coming in, Terry. Okay. Let's take that call. Good morning. You're on Niagara County's Great History Show with the Baseball Show. We have about 2 minutes. Make it quick. Thank you.
Good morning. I enjoyed your history show, and I wished you were on more often.
Well, we'll see what we can do about that.
I enjoy hearing them.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, Terry, go ahead.
Well, John, yeah, we have some, as I was saying, there's a uniform shirt, there's a baseball, and a couple of trophies from his time with the Lockport Busmen, and some, you know, some pennants. So they really add you know, a lot to our exhibit. You know, so we don't, unfortunately, we don't have as many baseball artifacts in our collection as we would like. So if there are people out there who have anything, you know, relating to, you know, the semi-pro league, the Erie Suburban League, or, you know, the Pony League, or even, you know, the midget leagues, any, you know, uniforms or hats or gloves or anything of that, I'm sure we'd love to have them. And also we have you know, just to add a little bit of flavor, I'll tell you, we had a bit of trouble getting them, but just to add a little flavor, as I said, to our display, we have some boxes of Cracker Jack in our exhibit. So you know, but I'll tell you that because of the pandemic, I guess they're not making Cracker Jacks at the moment. So, you know, there's no, you know, baseball games to sell them at. So, but we're lucky we were able to get a hold of a couple of boxes.
Well, we're just about out of time. It has been a real blast today. I would like to thank Terry Abram for stopping over and telling us about the baseball exhibit. And I'm going to leave you, John, with four words. Barra Maris Mantle Scourin. The championship lineup that I listened to in 1960 when I was ready to hit out of high school.
Bill O'Reilly here. Please stay tuned for the O'Reilly Update coming up at 12:15 as part of the Niagara Noon News Hour right here on WLVL Lockport.
The National Anthem at noon on Hometown 1340 AM and 105.3 FM WLVL.